when you understand it, why has Facebook, why is Friends Reunited not Facebook? You know, Friends Reunited started as a way of people coming together, largely through an educational thing. So why didn't that become Facebook and be where Facebook is today? It's largely because the technology and the connected qualities, you know, it just, and then you can say, so look at the way they use simplicity here and the way they connect and feed or provide ability to this connective thing. And I think you see that about in the younger generation. And I think anyone who's a parent, you know, I used to have a lot of freedom when I was young. And my parents would let me go out here, there and everywhere. And it's kind of like, you know, just make sure, you know, summer, just be, make sure you're back by dusk. And you'd always push it, wouldn't you? And I guess it's a product of the way we live now is that as parents and like that, we just get a little bit more scared. There's more cars on the road. There's not so many open spaces. There's not many things to do. It all seems a bit more of a difficult world. But it still doesn't drive away the need for these youngsters, you know, in their teenage years. They want to be together. They want to do the things that I was doing, like hang around, you know, hang around the paper shop and go over the wreck and play some football, then hang around the paper shop and that kind of thing, just because you want to be with your mates. And so what they're coming home and saying, no, we don't want you out doing this. And so actually they're finding this way to connect, you know, whether it's through Bebo or, you know, or the migration that seems largely to happen now into Facebook or MSN Messenger. And I think that's really, really interesting because they want to be together to share experiences, talk about the films, what you're doing, you know, when we're going shopping, all these kind of things that used to take place in a very verbal conversation when you met up with your mates. And they are driving this incredibly, I think. And the technology that Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and a number of their ilk have really, you know, it just makes it so easy. You know, I mentioned to you earlier, Paul, you know, for someone like me who's a corporate communicator, digital communicator, you know, you do the lessons with my eldest who's 13, and you talk about responsibility, you know, surfing the web, and she comes to you and says, can I have an MSN account? And you do all that, and you kind of control it, and you have all your family things. Then the next thing is, can I have a Facebook account? You know, and she started on Bebo. Very interesting for me. Not very long on there, straight into Facebook, peer pressure like that. Understood it, you know, kind of like this, and then, you know,
came and asked. That was good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Having access, but then you realised that actually, when I started to look, actually, who she was talking to, it's the circle of friends, and it might be bigger because it's the way it happened than my, you know, little gang that I ran around with. But actually, it's largely the people that she's at school with or knows like that. It's not many people she don't know on there, you know. And then you discover that she's also got a Twitter account and she's beginning to use it to connect with her friends, and she's been able to do that. She's not come to me for that and say, no, you know, this would be a good thing. And I'm kind of thinking, she's 13, she's quite mature and responsible so far, and she's learning this. So as a digital communicator, I'm understanding, I'm preaching, you know, the impact this is having on the world. So I you know, what that would, if she'd have said, I don't know, what do you want to use that for? You know, you can wait till you're 18 and responsible. But she's done it, and she's learned it from her peers. All established, got a nice background on there, you know, profile pic, and you know. So when I discovered it, it's kind of like, you know, good for you. But it's absolutely salutary about how easy it is for these people to connect and like that. And that drives me into one of my hobby horses, absolutely, which is, I think, for corporate communications or any kind of communications that's trying to connect with people, it's fixing the here and now is, yeah, busy. We all do it. And it's relatively one of the simple things, you know, planning what you're going to do in 3-6 months, you know, next year. The real big ticket thing is actually planning about 3, 5, 7, 9 years' time. Because my daughter, if she goes into further education, by the time her and her ilk come out into the big wide world of ugly work in their early 20s, say, they are going to be bringing a technological driven level of expectation that's unbelievable. So they're going to be saying, I want to be a customer of yours and I do things like this, so what have you got? How can I do it? Or I want to be part of a community.
Show me.
I want to be part of a community, so I'm interested in these things, so how do I, you know, like that. Or I am going to be working for you, so what kind of tools have you got that can help me do my job for you better? Or finally, I'd like to be an investor. You know, I think I might want to be a shareholder or a stakeholder or something within that. So how do I don't want to turn up physically. I don't ever want to work in your office, but I want to be part of your business and have a connection with you. So what have you got? Oh, you haven't got that. Well, perhaps I'll go over there because they seem to have got it and that fits with me, that. And I think every business should be thinking about this change that's happening. You're seeing it happen every moment. And the fact that big business, which is predominantly, say, supermarket business, who used to rely on people, you know, once, two, three times a week, whatever it was, physically, you know, going to these big, you know, small shops and big out-of-town stores, accommodating, we must have huge car parks because they're all coming in their droves. This growth of their internet business, you know, fascinating, because people at the end of the day, in great numbers, say, don't actually physically need to do that. I buy the same thing nearly every week. Why don't I just make it easy for myself, give me more free time and have it delivered? And I think big companies have really got to seriously think about not only what these implied changes are and things that we know around the internet in your hand through mobile technology, the community aspects of connecting and also, you know, delivering verdicts on companies through, you know, either praise or damning when things go wrong. But how, you know, what is the world going to look like? And it's not actually these great things like futurologists, but these things are now happening at quite a pace. Mm. And there's things that you think, oh, they'll never take off, and do. There's things that you kind of go, oh, that looks really, really good, and it doesn't. So predicting the future is a difficult art. But there's certain themes that come together. And, you know, particularly when you look at a global position, you see certain themes emerging, the much, you know, spoken about rise of mobile technology in the Asia Pacific. The fact that already, I think, you know, if we stop today and look at the number of TVs in the world,
mm-hmm.
the number of desktop computers, and then absolutely dwarfed by the number of mobile phones, and then within that segment, the absolutely accelerating rise of smartphones within that. So if you are a increasingly westernized person in China, what's the likelihood you will buy a desktop computer to put in the corner of wherever you live? It might be in a rural situation. Who knows? How likely are you to buy a web-enabled phone in the next 10 years? Quite likely. And how, therefore, are you expecting to do your connections with whoever it is with that, with your friends and or your bank or your customers or your supermarket or your fashion or whatever? And I think that's the thing that, you know, that drives me. Two things. Thinking about that is absolutely helping companies to understand that. And I think that has implications not only for big business global, but absolutely for you know, small to medium-sized firms as well, about their customers and the way they want to provide, fundamentally, driven, you know, a choice. Because those companies that kind of go, we're here in that way and we don't want that anymore, it's a difficult balance, I know, but actually that's what this other thing is driving. The demand that people can say, I choose to do it like this, what have you got?
And if you don't?
I know I'm different to that, yeah. that last person you were talking to, but that's me. I'm, you know, that's what floats my boat. I want to do it like this. So I think that's where companies starting to need to think really about what their response and what they're going to do about that.
Because I think you do have a recognition of that, maybe not to the extent of how big it's going to be or how fast some of these transitions will happen, but it's a kind of tomorrow problem for them, and they see it scary. It's more, I think, wanting to know how to get started. You know, how do you get, you know, where you've got the majority of people who haven't, of corporate communicators who have not started to properly engage in social media or in interacting with their stakeholders in various ways.